And now, it's time for The Visit with Joe Dreyfus. Let's visit and discuss Arizona's history, along with the issues of the day affecting the great outdoors.
Nobody knew where he came from. They won't forget he came by. They won't forget how a .44 gun one night made the difference in size. As for me, I'll remember the sadness shown in the eyes of the man. If we meet someday, you can bet I will say that it's me, Mr. Shorty, your friend.
Good evening, Tucson, Arizona, and Southern Arizona. This is The Visit with Joe Dreyfus at KJLL 1330 AM. You can join the conversation here at 529-3508. And we've got an exciting show today. I have two guests today. But before that, Paul Pearson, how was your weekend, buddy?
Well, just another day in paradise today. How about yourself?
Well, Pilgrim, you got here and you're over in heaven, my part of the country.
Yes, we are, aren't we?
Yes, and it was a beautiful day. And I had to work up in Catalina, Arizona at Saddlebrook this morning and yesterday with one of my favorite contractors, and that would be the Lippert Construction, Daryl Lippert. And no finer contractor is there in the city of Tucson or general area. And if I was to win the lottery tomorrow, I'd go get another big old piece of property. I'd put the money in escrow, give Daryl the plans. This is how good this gentleman and how much integrity he has. And I would hand him the plans and drive away. Tell him, buddy, the money's in a bank, draw on it as you need, and when you're done, give me a holler, and then we'll go hunt Alaska. And so anyway, I bailed him out of another one, you know, quite a gentleman. Today I have two guests. I have a gentleman, James Masterson, calling in from Florida, and I have a club member, her fellow club member here in the Sakwa, Lisa Haldane, and she's a prune picker from California that went to the U of A and graduated, and she's a civil engineer. Now, Paul, do you know about the engineers and the Aggies at the U of A? Do you have any idea of the big rivalry?
I do not. Can you tell us?
For years, we had the tug of war. Now, I don't know whether the sissy boys of today still have that tug of war over the little pond thing out in front of what's the old building there?
Old Main.
Yeah, every year, and I never got wet. So, but anyway, Lisa here is a cutter, and what's the name of your horse?
Silver Cassie.
Well, anyway, we're going to talk with Mr. Masterson, and he is an equine massage expert. And he's going to be doing a workshop here in Tucson on February 27th and 28th at Desert Springs Ranch, Marana, Arizona. And we're going to inform our listeners about the advantages of Mr. Masterson's technique. And Jim, are you with us?
I am with you.
Well, my friend, I understand you're a corn-fed kid.
Well, I live in Iowa, but I'm a prune picker.
You're a prune picker, too?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know, they're everywhere.
Well,
I've never picked a prune.
Well, you know one thing about it. My state's being invaded from every direction, from the south.
I've never picked a prune either.
From the west, everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, in your brochure and what I got off of what Lisa sent me, the one that caught my eye, it says it is an equally effective technique for any equine discipline and a wonderful way to increase trust, bonding, understanding between human and horse. And that does it for me, buddy. Now, I have here, a very short list of all of the places you've been and things you've done. Mr. Masterson was an equine massage therapist for the United States endurance team. Mm-hmm. at the 2006 FEI World Equestrian Games at Aachen, Germany, and the 2008 FEI World Endurance Championship in Terengganu, Malaysia. Thank you, Jim. I guess they don't teach us to speak as well here in Arizona as California.
Oh, I had to go there to hear how it was.
Oh. And tell us about some of the other horses. I am told that you have worked on the finest horses in the United States and in the world.
Well, I got started doing this when I was working on Hunter Jumpers at Hunter Jumper Horse Shows. So that's kind of where my main work has been, and that's kind of where I learned most of what I learned. But any equine athlete is going to get sore and stiff and tight and just from the nature of their work, and so it really does apply to any discipline. A horse is a horse. They have 4 feet, and they have all the body parts are the same, and they work hard, and they start to get kind of tensed up and torqued up in certain areas, and if you can release those key areas, you can improve their performance. So this type of body works mainly about improving performance, but the nature of the work itself, it's very interactive with the horse. It's not just kind of a plain old, rubbing here and rubbing there and massaging here and massaging there. It's a lot about reading the responses of the horse to your touch as you're doing the work. And as you read the responses of the horse starts to release the tension. And then he lets you know he's released the tension, and you know you're on the right track. And so it's kind of the horse actually participates in the process. And that's where the building trust comes in, because the horse really starts to do this with you rather than just tolerate it.
Now, I'm going to tell a few stories here. Now, at this point, I'm 58. When I was 8 years old, my dad bought a horse off Rito Racetrack, several horses. And the Bear Canyon Creek ran behind our house, and of course it ran, at that time, it ran about 10 months of the year, and most of the time it was snow melt off Mount Lemmon coming down. We put a cable across from one cottonwood tree to the other and tied these horses down in the creek and let the cool water run across his bad knees and ankles. And the next thing you know, there would be trailer loads of guys coming off the track during the meet asking if they could tie their horses in the creek there.
Yeah.
And now, today on RFD TV, you see this boot, and it's got ice and it bubbles, and you put it on the horse, and it does the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is I discussed with you off air, my mother was doing implanting of colts on the side of the Catalina Mountains about the time Dr. Miller was born. And I watched his film, and it's like everything I was told and every response. Now, is this a new technology or new science, or is it an old technique that's being revisited and then taken further with science and intelligence with the animal?
I don't know that it's probably as old as a horse. As the horse itself, because we're working with the horse's nervous system to release tension. So it kind of falls in line a lot with resistance-free training when you're asking the horse to do something, and rather than making him do it or forcing him to do it, you can also ask him to release tension. So the technology, I guess you call it technology itself, is kind of a reinvention of the horse's response to what we do, I guess. So I don't know anybody that in the body work, equine body work and massage or chiropractic or osteopathic world that does this specifically, and they might use parts of it in the way they work with the horse, but it really kind of is it's as old as the horse is the horse itself. In that sense, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. What I'm seeing today in so many of these clinicians is they put out little snippets of things I heard as a child. That were in, I would say, when America went mobile, if you will, with machines and cars. Mm-hmm. We just kicked our mules and horses away, and now they're more of a recreational animal instead of a beast of burden, if you will. Mm-hmm. But along with that, there was so much knowledge lost and forgotten or put away, if you will, and now I'm seeing what I consider a huge rebirth, and in I think they're taking it actually even farther because of the worth of the animal. You know, the cutting horses or some of the jumping horses are so expensive,
yeah.
And you can't afford, if you're in the game, you can't afford to have them down.
Nope.
And then the other thing that I'm looking at is I want longevity out of my animals. And now Lisa, I'm told that you have studied this technique. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went through a GEMS certification program and just finished that in November
and
last
she's very
year.
Very good, by the way.
Well, I'm
I have
telling
to brag on her a little bit. You know. She's not going to brag, so I'll brag. You can brag on me if you want a little bit.
All right, Jim.
Well, why don't you tell us about your experience of going through the class? And the reason being is Jim's going to be here the 27th and 28th and put on this training, and I want to go. I want to watch this. I want to see this.
Tremendous. Well, Jim has several steps that you go through to get certification in his program. And so what the first step in that is taking his weekend seminar, which is what we're going to offer here in the end of February for 2 days. And you go and you learn some of the fundamentals about how to work on the horses using his technique. And then you go and you practice that a bit on your horses, and you figure out if this is something that you think you'd like to pursue further. Then you go on for a week of training that's intensive with Jim, where he goes around and visits different performance horse barns in the area where he's offering the training. It's 5 intensive days of training, and then you leave and you do 40 case studies that you have to write up and submit, and then you present a video to them of you working on a horse. And if they feel that you've gone far enough then and have kind of mastered the work, then you're ready to come back for a final week of training where you assist at one of his week-long training sessions. And then, you know, Jim also doesn't just certify everybody that comes through the program. He really makes sure that they've kind of mastered the level of skill that he thinks they need to have to work under his name.
Jim, question. And don't misinterpret this.
Okay.
My vet, Dr. Randy McMillan, is my buddy, and he gave me, he works at this also, and I have a 35-year-old pet mule. She's a 900-pound yard ornament. She's Arab, so that means you know she's arthritic, out of an Arab mare. And at one point, she got to where I thought I was going to have to put her down because she couldn't get up and down.
Yeah.
And she's got arthritis in the ribs in the end of the back there. Uh-huh. And he taught me just a few small things. And okay, I will claim total ignorance on the horse massage therapy, but just that little bit. Just that 5 pounds of pressure, mm-hmm. working one muscle and then back and forth. Hey, she's probably going to go to age 40. I'll be feeding her forever. It's amazing. On the other end of that, I have another vet that shall remain nameless that I worked with when I was a child who I adore and love very much. And he's basically retired, but he works a lot of the endurance races. He made a comment, so let's throw a little fire in any direction we want to. He said the horses with the sorest backs on the endurance races were all using English saddles. Now, with what you do, and you cover all the different sports, what's your take on that comment?
Well, in endurance nowadays, they have more specialized saddles, so I don't see a lot of English saddles in endurance. And I think, here's my take on it, but an English saddle normally a horse that jumps or does dressage or does any of the English sports, the saddle's not on all day long, you know. They school their horses 45 minutes a day or an hour a day, and the saddle's off. And when they do an event, it doesn't take 10 hours. So I can imagine in the old days, if they used English saddles in endurance because they were lighter, that it might have caused some problems on horses' backs. But nowadays they use endurance saddles, or they use a lot of Australian stock saddles that distribute the load a little more evenly and widely. So I can see where an English saddle on a horse's back for 100 miles or 50 miles might cause some problems.
Okay. Thank you for that information. Now I'll probably get 25 calls at my house.
Yeah.
8 calls, too. People I call friends.
Yeah. Donna gets probably a lot of calls, too. But
no, you know, I finally reached that point in life and age that every discipline should get its own respect. It doesn't matter if you're a roper, cutting horse person, you know, give everyone their due respect, and there's something to be learned from every different discipline, and there's something different going on there that until you try it, you don't know what they're up against,
yeah.
Whether it be the animal or the human being. But this hands-on, what I noticed with my mule, and it's just, you know, it's a little bitty old white 35-year-old pet, but that 5 minutes in the morning, that's all it takes to keep her right on each side, you know, 2.5 minutes on each side, and my hands are, I've got bone chips in my hands, I'm a contractor, and just those few minutes, she can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you talk about bonding, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's thoroughbred, quarter horse, whatever, for me, that little bit of bonding is worth the time and effort. Now, when you first start doing this, what's the general, and it's a generalization, what's the general reaction from a horse that's never had the entire body work done to him?
Lisa, do you want to answer that? And then I'll...
Sure. Jim's method looks for the response in the horse. And the very first thing that he teaches us to do is to just take our hand and run it along what's called the bladder meridian in acupressure or acupuncture. And running that lightly over that area, kind of so lightly that you're in a way under the horse's defensive radar. So they really can't help but start to pay attention to what you're doing. And the first responses that you start to see are that horse's eyes softening, and they start to kind of blink, and you look for those blinking spots because that's areas of attention that they're drawing your attention to. And then, you know, it's so interesting because as you move along, their intensity of interest in what you're doing, while they're just standing most of the time, starts to build. And then that awareness of their attention starts to increase, and they actually just start to yawn and lick and chew and snort and sneeze and stuff like that. And those are some of the releases of tension that you see. But it's really a gratifying experience, and you see that pretty much right away on any of the horses that I've started to work on.
Is there...
Now I know what to say next time somebody asks me that. This is a good answer.
Jim, have you ever had a horse that just was impossible to give... one of your methods too?
Horses that are extremely sore, and also every horse is a little different in physiology and personality too. So some horses are very territorial and defensive. So the minute you walk into their stall, they're stomping their feet and they're putting pin in their ears no matter what, because they're just genetically programmed to do that. Those for that particular horse. So, but the thing is, you got to get the work done if you want to get the horse feeling better. So. There's some horses are going to be more difficult than others, but I mean, I've never had a horse that I've not worked on because of that. Because, like Lisa said, once you get, they're going to defend where they're sore and where they're going to even block it out. Once you find that, a lot of horses off the bat, that bothers them that you found their weak spot. But once they realize that they're starting to release that tension and release that pain, they start to soften and they start to let you in. Now, some horses that are really defensive or territorial, they'll they'll soften, they'll let that in, their head will drop, their eyes will, they'll start yawning, their eyes will blink, they'll let that tension out, and then they'll kind of snap back into that old program of, you know, what are you doing here? And then you got to go, you know, go to the next level and get some release of tension from out of them, and then they'll soften, and they'll soften, and then they'll snap back again. So, you know, every horse is different, and the process is different. But they are genetically programmed to block pain. That's how they survive in the wild. And so when you find that pain on some horses and start to get it out, it bothers them a little bit. But they can't help but soften and release that pain, you know,
now
over
you,
and over and over again.
You can work from ear to tail. In other words, what I'm saying, I've had horses that actually pack horses, you know, being tied off nose to tail and have, you know, a rodeo on one end with a sore tail, quote unquote. But hawks, stifles, you can actually, through this method, help relieve the tension, the stress, and the pain without drugs. Bless you both.
Oh, yeah.
How long does it take to give a horse a total body? I mean, okay, we'll say that in theory you're at a jumping competition and a competitor comes over and says, Jim, I've got a problem here. Something sore in this horse's back. How long would it take? Say it's after they've shown once, they've got a 3-day event.
Yeah.
We'll say an eventing horse. How long would it take if he's not just, I mean, totally injured, but he's sore?
Yeah.
Okay. For you to work that horse over to possibly bring him back for the next 2 days of eventing. And I've had horses that, you know, for whatever reason, sore in the neck or back, and you know, you're done. You got to go put them up or go home or whatever. So would you run that scenario for me, please?
Okay. Say the horse has done an event, and then they come back. They say, my horse is sore. You know, there's something going on here, and I got to go again either later today or tomorrow or whatever. If it's tomorrow, I'll spend an hour or an hour and a half to work on the complete horse, because everything's connected. So the horse has a sore back. You can work on his back for 20 minutes, and he might feel better for a little while, but whatever's causing that pain in his back is, you want to find out what the cause is. And that's one thing. And the other thing is you got to do the whole horse. You got to do his pole area. If he's sore in the back, he's going to be sore in the pole. So you can release tension in the back, but if he's still sore in the pole, that tension in the back is going to come back. So I would say, say between two classes, I needed to work on the horse. If I could work on it 20 minutes, I might be able to make his back feel a little better for the next class. But ideally, an hour or an hour and a half will allow you to go through the whole horse and make sure everything's loosened up.
Jim, we're coming up on the news and the break, and I have to do some ads, but sure. You got to stay with me through this. We'll be back in about 6 minutes, partner.
Okie dokie.
Hang on. Thank you.
CNN Radio, I'm April Williams. Lawmakers might have difficulty making bipartisan decisions, but the head of one of the nation's largest labor unions says voters won't have that trouble come November.
You either get on the program with jobs on a scale necessary to help us put millions of people back to work, or you're going to face the wrath of those voters in November. That's Democrat, Republican, and Independent alike.
AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka tells CNN State of the Union not enough has been done to create jobs, even though the White House is touting job creation through the stimulus program. The watchdog charged with monitoring the government's $700 billion bailout program says it has failed to achieve its two main goals, to boost bank lending and to halt the spread of foreclosures. At least three people have died after a winter storm crossed over Oklahoma this weekend. Thousands of homes and businesses are still without power. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hi, I'm Chris Johnson, Human Resources Manager, and I can tell you, as a leading tech company, we naturally use the web to find talent. My job is to find the brightest tech candidates. Dice.com has the most qualified and talented candidates out there. Because Dice focuses on technology and engineering, I save a lot of time and trouble sifting through thousands of resumes from sites that aren't relevant to our business. Usually, we're looking for experienced software and hardware engineers, DBAs, storage engineers, project managers. We've found over half our key hires through Dice.
Dice is the number one online technology job board. For over 17 years, Dice has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Post your open technology positions on Dice to access the best tech talent, or search through thousands of resumes from qualified engineering and tech professionals from all across the country. Visit Dice.com. Dice.com.
This Valentine's Day, send your sweetheart the gift that shines above all others. Name a star after them. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after your sweetheart and send a beautiful gift package. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for this year's hottest Valentine's Day gift.
The 52nd Annual Grammy Awards, Sunday, January 31st on CBS. Find out who takes home the Grammy for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album. Tony Bennett, Michael Bublé, Harry Connick Jr., Liza Minnelli, or Willie Nelson. Music's biggest night is coming to you live from Los Angeles. We'll be broadcast in HDTV and 5.1 surround sound. And the Grammy nominees CD is in stores now, featuring Coldplay, U2, and Eric Clapton with Steve Winwood. The Grammy Awards, Sunday, January 31st, 8 p.m. on CBS.
We are stronger than ever.
AM 1330, KJLL.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Where Tucson talks.
When you need your drywall fixed, you don't need a dusty white trail of footprints through your house. Dreyfus Drywall will solve your drywall problems professionally and at a cost you can afford. Call Dreyfus Drywall today at 405-8486. That's 405-8486. Licensed and bonded for over 20 years. At Dreyfus Drywall, small projects and small repairs are the best. Call Dreyfus Drywall today at 405-8486. That's 405-8486. Dreyfus Drywall, affordable solutions to your drywall needs.
Hey Tucson, the Marksman Pistol Institutes at 5051 East 29th Street and 1280 West Prince Road offers a full array of training for handgun use, teaching safety, marksmanship, handling, and storage with a one-on-one instruction. Ladies, listen to me. Not only do these NRA-certified instructors teach a youth basic long gun course, but there's a specialized course for women only, which covers the skills necessary to be safe, proficient, and confident with a handgun. Marksmanship Pistol Institute will supply you ladies a handgun and ammunition to participate in their indoor firing range during the training. Ladies, empower yourself. Don't be afraid. My mother learned to shoot at age 6 years, the same as Sandra Day O'Connor. Learn to protect yourselves. Learn to shoot safely for the fun of hitting the target. Taking the course, there's a free 30-day range pass. The Marksmanship Pistol Institute is approved by the Arizona Department of Public Safety to teach CCW, the Concealed Carry Weapons Permit course. 8 hours of instruction and live fire training. There are range fee discounts for military, security, and law enforcement personnel, and rental for eye, ear protection, as well as firearm rental and ammunition at the climate-controlled indoor ranges. Marksman Pistol Institute, 5051 East 29th Street, Tucson. Call 747-8657. That's 747-8657. Or at 1280 West Prince Road, 293-1665. That's 293-1665. Marksman Pistol Institute, where gun control is about safely hitting the target with confidence. And we're back, and I'd like to add, too, also at the Marksman Pistol Institute, beginning March 20th, the Marksman Pistol Institute will be offering an all-women's CCW class. It's taught by women, for women, It'll be taught on Saturdays at the 29th Street location and evenings at the Prince Road locations. Now, they will alternate months. So March, it'll be at the 29th. In April, it'll be at the Prince Road location. And I want to thank those people over there. They have been so kind to me, and they're all professional and all great Americans over there. But then I got to tease my guest here. Now, you get all your feet over at Vaquero, don't you?
Most of my feet.
Oh, man. See, she told me while we were on break, she's a prune picker, and she has to have some of her prune picker feet imported. Go figure that. Hey, the great people over there at 3301 North Freeway Road, Vaquero Feeds, where Real Cowboy Shop is, in my opinion, the finest livestock supply house and feed store in the state of Arizona. And in the month of February, on the 6th, they're going to have the Saturday tack swap meet, and you can reserve a place at the table for $10 and swap tack and sell your old tack. Then on the 15th through the 20th, all week, they're going to have the Vaquero's 8th anniversary sale. And it'll be sales going on over there all through the week. Then on the 20th of February, Saturday, Vaquero's 8th Annual Customer Appreciation Day. And there will be an abundance of activities going on all day. New products, manufacturer representatives will be there. And plus, they're going to have a demonstration by Clay Harper and Lonnie Leach starting at 8 o'clock. So it's a busy month next month at Vaquero. And remember that February is rodeo month. So for you cowboys that are going to compete with the big dogs of the PRCA, get over to Vaquero and get a hold of those brand new cactus ropes. They've got Weaver products over there. If you're a dog enthusiast, they've got Loyal dog food and grain-free wellness dog food. I don't care what it is. If they don't have it, they'll get it for you over at Vaquero Feeds. 3301 North Freeway Road, 888-8489. Well, we're back. Well, Lisa, what do you think about this radio gig so far?
I think this is pretty cool, Joe.
Well, Lisa and I are planning on doing another show maybe down the road here on Cutting. Well, Mr. James, what do you think so far?
Oh, I like it.
I'm just a hick raised out in the brush trying to do radio, and I'm having more fun than allowed by law.
Well, that's good.
Now, tell me about some of the high-end horses that you have worked on. Are you at liberty to name the horse?
Well, yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I gotta tease you, Jim. Okay. I was told you've worked on some of the finest horses in the country, and that you don't brag on yourself. So we're going to try and I'm trying to get you to give us information on the really good stuff that you, they're all good.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the top end competitive horses. What horses have you worked on and where?
Well, I was lucky when I was in the winter down here in Florida, in Wellington, Florida. There's a huge hunter jumper show circuit. So I was lucky enough to start working down here when I first started doing this, and I hooked up with the guy who's been in that hunter jumper show business and with one of the top vets in that business for a long time, and he accumulated a lot of clients and high-end clients, so I work with him in the winters down here, and then at a couple of shows in Kentucky during the spring, and at Washington International Horse Show in Washington, D.C. in the fall, at which they call indoors when the finals, you know, come around in the fall. So through him, I was able to work on some really, and still do, work on some really top horses that compete in the World Cup and in the Nations Cup and the Pan Am Cup and really high-end Grand Prix shows or, you know, events. So just some really high-end horses. I don't know if you'd recognize the names, but
Well, we have quite a few people out here in Tucson. Actually, we had a newspaper reporter, and I'm trying to think of his name, a journalist here that I read for many years, and his daughter was on a U.S. equestrian team. Hey, if you know that the answer to that, call us at 529-3508. I'm trying to think of their names. Ah, man. Age. It'll get us all sooner or later.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to think a little bit. But, you know, the Animal Planet had a show a couple years ago called The Road to the McClay, which is a big equitation event. And Brianne Goutal, actually, she won the class. And her horse, Logan, was this black European warm blood. And he's you know, he has like a fan club all around the country. And he was one of my regular clients. Logan was. And Hillary Dobbs is a pretty big rider now. She's Lou Dobbs' daughter. She shows quite
right.
Her horses. I work on them pretty regularly, and they're really, really wonderful horses. So,
I have a question, just a subject. What college did you go to in California, or did you?
Oh, are you talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, nope, no college. I'm self-trained.
Okay, well, for all you listeners and you prune pickers out there, final score, Arizona 76, Cal 72. I just thought I'd throw that out. We got to have fun in life, Jim.
Yeah. Did that just come in? Was that a newsflash?
That's my radio guy. Just help me.
That is hot off the wires.
There
hot
you
off
go.
The wire. You heard it here first.
There you go.
Wait till the Hawkeyes get hold of it. No, I'm kidding.
Now, have you spent much time out here in Arizona yet, Jim?
Nope. I come through there every once in a while, and I'll be there soon. So,
well, it's February 27th and 28th, correct? And it's at Desert Springs Ranch. Lisa, where is Desert Springs Ranch?
It's right off Avra Valley Road out in Marana. It's a bit south of that along the pipeline road down there, the gas pipeline road. Turn off down there. But if people are interested in the workshop, they can call me on my phone. It's 300-1612. And they can also email for information lhaldane@earthlink.net. And also the seminar is listed on Jim's website, which is www.mastersonmethod.com.
Good plug.
Hey, I may be out of a job here next week. You know, you never know.
We got a break while we can.
No, now, in jumping, eventing, what part of the horse? Of course, in cutting, it's always hawks.
Yeah.
And because of the hard stops. But in jumping, what part of the horse do you most often have to work on? Or an area? I know it's the entire horse, but what area gets sore the most on the eventing horses?
These are more show jumpers, but it's surprising that the front feet are the biggest issue. They're heavy horses, these warm bloods, and their front feet take quite a beating, and front feet usually what we're working on in the body comes from somewhere else, and most often it's feet. You know, no feet, no horse, and so the pole, the atlas area, the neck shoulder withers junction, those are pretty key areas in these jumpers because front feet are an issue. And front feet get sore, front feet joints start to get tired, and so it shows up in the front end of the horse and the neck shoulder withers, and most importantly, probably the pole.
Now, what about race horses?
I don't work on a lot of race horses. I worked on a few, and we have a lady in New Jersey certified in our thing who does quite a few race horses, but they're young horses most of the time, and they show up all over the place, but a lot in the front end also because their joints are still growing. A lot of them are pretty young, and so I think they end up with a lot of front end stuff, and they end up with a lot of hind end stuff too.
Well, I'm kind of a weirdo. I'm a proponent. Let's quit pushing the 3-year-old babies.
Yeah.
In all equine events, so hard. Let's wait till they're four. You know, that 1 year, and face facts, at least on ranch horses, which I'll say I'm semi-qualified to address, that's when they really start coming into their own and their brain power and their structure. And horses grow till they're five. But I'm saying, you know, I wished all, you know, NCHA, the all-American, Kentucky Derby. Come on, let's just back off 1 year. But, you know, if they backed off the 1 year, I guess it'd ruin the entire system nationwide for everybody, for the producers. But I'd like to see it happen. Think of how many more cutting horses would come in and last longer and be sound if they came into the futurity at 4 years old. And think of how much tougher the futurity would be.
Hold that thought for our next conversation.
Oh.
Well, I'm lucky in the show jumping world. They bring them up a little slower, and they have to be a little more combobulated, you know, when they start jumping. So that, you know, we don't have that problem as much. And in endurance, also, they really want their horses to last in endurance. So they don't start them very young. So I'm kind of lucky in that respect. That don't have
you know how to beat endurance horses very easily?
Yeah.
Thoroughbred mule.
Oh, okay, well, I'll
pass that along. Pass that along throughout the country. That'll make you very popular very quickly.
I'm stopping in Ocala on the way back down and visit Val Canavy. She's a 2-time world champion, and I'm just going to put that idea.
Just target a really good thoroughbred bred mule. And
what are you doing with all these Arabs? You need a thoroughbred mule.
Hey, works for me. Isn't it fascinating if you step back and you're in a situation and a part of the economy that is so unique, but you step back and I've always said, you know, the way to start an argument is go to a cattle growers meeting and say that the only cattle to have are half Charolais, Angus bred back on a Angus bull. And if you have 200 people there, there's 400 arguments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so unique, but a horse is still a horse.
Yeah.
And they all get sore in every aspect of what they do if they're working. And I feel in certain ways we don't ask as much of our horses in certain ways as they did in the 1910 or 1890, and yet in another direction we're asking twice as much today from these horses than they did back then.
I wanted to mention about the way I use this work that Jim does on my horses in the cutting world, and that's really why I went through Jim's training, was so that I could be more in touch with my own horses. And especially I have an older mare that's 12 years old and has been a road warrior and hauled all over the West Coast. And so I was pretty aware when I bought her that I really wasn't in touch with where she was hurting. And I had some resistance in her and felt like she was probably not wanting to do this job anymore. And I still feel like she probably doesn't want to do this job anymore. But what I've figured out is how to make her more comfortable on a daily basis, and how to, you know, when I approach her and go to saddle her, she still has the ears pinned and the head kind of whipping around and that kind of stuff. But within, you know, a minute or two of just laying my hands on her, now that I know how and what to do, we're kind of over that. And I can get her, you know, kind of on a, you know, she's probably got sore front feet, or she might have sore hocks and that. And she is older and a little bit arthritic. And so those things are kind of recurring over and over again and building up every time I go to ride her. So if I understand where those stress points are and those tension points, and I can kind of let them go each time I go, that's really kind of the goal, what I have for people to get out of this kind of work that Jim does, is to, as an owner, be more in touch with your own horse and lay your hands on your own horse and understand how to maintain it a lot better on a day-to-day basis.
But what I'm wondering, and what I think is, you know, rattling around in my little brain, is if you learn this technique, think of the vet bills we will save in the long run, and the fact that I'm a proponent of don't use a drug unless it's the last. In other words, to comfort an animal, if you can, you know, put their legs in cold water and cool it down and get the fever out and comfort the animal instead of giving the shot of bute, okay, what I'm viewing and what I'm very curious about is, in the long run, how much would you save on vet bills? And okay, let's face facts. Many people that own horses and love their horses more than they do their own family cannot afford that big time vet bill every time that horse has a boo boo or is sore. So how much advantage are we going to have here in the humane aspect of keeping a good horse just by attending a seminar and learning how to do this?
You're going to learn how to find out where your horse is starting to hurt, and you're going to be able to help him with that, but you're also going to be able to start to determine where that's coming from. So, you know, if it's coming from the feet or coming from a foot. That's kind of one aspect. And another is when you keep their body loose, then there's less concussion on their feet and legs, because it's like, you know, a shock absorber in a car. When it gets stiff or worn out, then there's a lot more pounding on the feet and legs. But when a horse can absorb that, the concussion and the contact of the foot with the ground over and over again, and absorb it in its body, then the feet and the legs are going to last longer. And I mean, one season, one of those horses I was talking about that lunged at you whenever you went in the stall, and he hated it every minute that you were in there. It was a show jumper, a very good one, and he was every week I worked on him, sometimes twice a week, and I kept him supple enough that halfway through the season we were standing around talking to the vet, and the vet says, "Well, what about Lotus? Last year I was, you know, injecting something every 3 weeks on him, and I can't figure out why, you know." This season, they haven't been calling me as much. I didn't say anything, but you know.
Yes, but the other factor, you just touched on my big issue. I've seen horses that were used and used and used, and they're sore, and they kept going with them, and you know, I guess that's not mine to judge, but you know, I still, it's an irritant to me. And then the next thing you know, the poor old pony, every time you walk in a corral, his ears are pinned. It's like, what are you going to stick me with? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to me that's going to cause pain for a little while? And, you know, he just remembers that needle going into him or whatever. He doesn't, they don't think like, oh, okay, 5 minutes later, the pain's gone away. He just remembers that initial pain coming from a human being. And so with that, said, in all seriousness, the farther we can stay away from having to use the pharmaceuticals, I'm all for this. And I have to tell you, when I started learning how to just a very minimal amount on this massage, and you know, starting at the pole and going back and working clear back to the hips and finding, and she's a mule. She will reach over. I mean, she's 35 years old, but if you reach a spot that's really sore and you don't work into it really slowly, she'll pin her ears, and she, you know, and she's a very gentle animal. She'll let you know in a heartbeat. So, but the minimum, you know, like I'm saying, I had like a 5 minute lesson, and of course, I know enough. About how the body works and the musculature. I mean, it's nothing like you guys, but just that minimal amount means a whole difference in this animal's life.
Well, there's a painkiller that's available that's free and it's natural that the horse produces called endorphins. And when you release tension in certain areas of the body, like the scapula and the neck and the shoulder withers junction, and the horse, it releases endorphins into the system, and the horse's nose drops down to the ground and it kind of goes into a daze. And it gives all the whole muscles in the whole body a chance to relax, because you just release this natural painkiller into the horse's system. That's the kind of painkillers I like.
Same here. Of course, a lot of people think it's an apple cookie that does that, but it's not. No, truly, working down that pole area and down through that neck and along those muscles, along that neck, I mean, that's how that minimal amount I've been taught, and then I've seen a little bit on TV, but I'm totally fascinated. By the way, Jim, I want you to do me a favor. That lady that you mentioned with those top-end jumping horses, you might mention to her that the world record high jump was done by an army mule. It's just short of 9 feet. It was a thoroughbred mule, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you just might, you know, that is documented too.
Was that well? This client I'm going to visit tomorrow. She's an endurance person, but I could mention it to some. They'd be even a little bit harder to convince down in the hunter jumper world down there in Wellington. But.
Well, I know of a couple of small endurance rides here in southern Arizona, and I have one friend, and he showed up with his top end. I mean, you can't even tell it's a mule till if it's in the trailer, you can't tell it's a mule. And when he pulled his mule out, and I mean, he's doing it like three times. He just does it to irritate people, and he just smokes them. And you know, old mule's heart rate is way down. And of course, but he rides in the mountains all the time, and it's kind of fun. Their intelligence is something. You know, I love intelligent animals, and their intelligence is just wonderful to deal with. But when they're hurting. This is a total different, and yeah, it's an equine, but when they're in pain, you definitely have to be careful and quiet. They're not quiet like a horse. They will reach over, and you hurt them, it's like twice as, you know, three times what a horse will do. Yeah. And so working on this little mule, it's just been nothing but fun. So
I don't know how they keep the speed up with all that wind resistance from the ears.
Well, oh boy. You know, we're going to have to get you in the studio, and I've got a couple of buddies here, and we could just go back and forth. You know what those big ears are for, though?
No.
That's to listen to the horses that are behind them. You know?
Yeah.
See where the competition might
be. They can break trail through the brush with those things.
There you go.
Guys behind them.
Yeah, and the predator thing. Well, you know. Now, in history, it's like here in Arizona, Cochise, when Bascom kidnapped three of his relatives, he offered a trade. And the trade was three other Anglos and 20 mules. So there you go. And he wound up hanging relatives. We got 2 minutes? Paul's telling me we've got 2 minutes. You're in Florida. Where are you headed next?
Oh, I'm here for the season, but I go out to, I have to call my wife and find out. She just tells me where to go, but I think I'm going to Austin, Texas, either next weekend or the weekend after. And then we have Tucson coming up, of course, at the end of February. So I'd have to go on my website and look at my calendar to see.
So basically they lied to you, too, when you were a child, same as they did me?
What did they say?
They told us we controlled the world. What a joke.
I don't know.
What a joke.
Yep.
It's the women that control the world.
Yes, I think they're the brains behind the operation.
There you go. Lisa, would you one more time give out his website and the information on this upcoming
sure,
seminar?
Sure. The phone number to call is 300-1612. My email address is lhaldane at earthlink.net. And Jim's website is mastersonmethod.com.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on, and we'll advertise you over the next several weeks, and hopefully we can get you and Lisa on again.
That'd be great. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Everyone have a great week, and to Kellen the Melon, Tristan the Piston, and Princess Althea, I'll see y'all next week.
Johnny Joe, KJLL, South Tucson.